Welcome back to the DocSF podcast. I'm Professor Stefano Bini, orthopedic surgeon at UCSF, and your host. Today, we bring you part two of our Startups We Love showcase, moderated by Dr. Nicholas Colivas from UCSF. You'll hear from VitVio, Tempida, The Commons Clinic, and Formos AI, four companies redefining orthopedic innovation. Let's join Nick on the DOCSF stage.
Let's go right ahead. Without further ado, VitVio, Thomas Knox, do you want to go ahead and tell us all about it?
Yes. Thank you so much. It is an absolute pleasure to be here. So nice to meet you guys. Thomas Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of VitVio. We build ambient sensing and computer vision technology for the operating room, as Li Lei Fei might say, spatial intelligence. Now, before I dive into it, I just want to touch on one thing that I think will hit home with a lot of people in the audience today, which is that as we try to make surgery safer and ironically more efficient, we always fall back on one thing, which is human manual input, whether that's filling another form, pressing another button, doing another step. And this has transitioned clinicians away from being clinicians and more towards data loggers. And we don't think that that's the right way to go. We think that we need to make a transition back to these things need to happen. It doesn't necessarily need to be them. Now, statistically speaking, every single person that we know within the Western world and now starting to extend beyond, there's an on average around 5 surgeries per person within their lifetime. And the staff, all of you that are handling these, are under immense and sustained pressure, all of which are expected to get even more challenging in the coming years when it comes to things like aging population, rising costs, lack of medical staff, all kind of culminating together to create a really difficult environment. And there's not a lot of help on the way, so we have to figure out technological solutions to help with this. Now, you add to that complexity of surgical processes. So for example, here, you can see a surgical process for a single surgery, orthopedic knee replacement. In this surgery, you have 43 steps, 12 different roles involved, and 20 different touch points. And funny enough, this does not even include the surgery itself. So this is just all the processes that go around it. Now, you look at this and you say, when an operating room makes up to about 40% of a hospital's expenses, you are looking at around a $50 billion per year problem in the US alone on this single space. Now, there was a study that was done by Dr. Claudia Rosales where she spent a lot of time at Michigan State digging through the trash, looking at the surgical processes, and wrote a paper on this. I reference it here if you guys would like to give that a look. Now, as I said before, all of these things come back to staff's manual input, whether that is manual time tracking, where you have somebody in the room logging every single stage of the surgery, writing that back to the EHR system, somebody's usually dedicated to this within the room, or barcode scanning, when you have the trays come in, or implants, and you have to check every single barcode, make sure that it's correct, and make sure that we have the right objects in the room. It's always a manual process. Or even simple things like communicating between departments. Whenever you need to walk out of the room, make a phone call, hope somebody answers that phone call. If they don't answer the phone call, make a phone call again. If they don't answer that one, walk down there very angrily and say, what are we doing? Where are you at? Now, we don't believe that that's the way the future should look. We think that the future should be based on ambient sensing and AI agents. So what do I mean by that? For example, here, you can see a live video from one of our operating rooms. Don't worry, it's a simulated surgery, chalet, so I can show it to you. But what we do is we digitalize the OR into 3D to understand who is doing what, when, where, why, within the context of the surgical process. We then take that information and then deploy an AI agent on top of it to act as another staff member in the room to help with taking over some of that administrative burden, such as logging the surgical stages, and then also populating that across the EHR system and using it as a context to address other aspects of the surgical process. So for example, in this case, we not only write to the EHR system, but we populate to the OR managers so they can see every stage of the surgery in real time. They can see if there's any delays in real time so they can react in real time. Because very often they're only finding out about these things when it's already occurring, which is too late. And they just kind of have to sit in their hands, hope and wait and see. The earlier we get this information, the earlier they can react and hopefully try to minimize the impact across the operating block. But we also take that information and use it for automatic orchestration. So when you're getting to that last like 20 minutes of a surgery, we'll send off an automatic alert to pre-op to tell them to prep the next patient, or to your environmental services, come to OR3 in 10 minutes to start the turnover, or to your PACU, hey, you need to have a bed ready because we're going to be sending a patient there in 15 minutes. The goal here is get people where they're supposed to be on time and completely autonomously. Now, since we're also tracking everything in the room in 3D, we also look at things like tray rationalization. There was a study that was done by one of the top 5 US hospitals, I can't name them, but they did a study of one of their environments. And they spent hundreds of man hours standing over the trays, logging every single tool that was being used in surgery, and found out that on average across their 14 operating rooms, about 40% of their tray was not being used. I know that this is a very simple tray. It's only for descriptive purposes so that you don't get lost looking at all of the different tracks going on. But this was costing about $1 million a month. And it's not necessarily in the tools themselves. It's in the downstream costs. You're in your still processing unit, your logistics, your purchasing. It all adds up very quickly. Now, I talked a lot about efficiency today, because efficiency is kind of the name of the game for every hospital globally. How do we do more with less, knowing that there's going to be these pressures coming in? However, that's not the name of the game for us as a company. We are not just a computer vision efficiency company. We are an ambient sensing company that builds across the entire data pipeline and perioperative process from start to finish. So looking in the beginning at how we digitalize the pre-op checklists, and a good example is if I send for pre-op, how to know automatically if the bed is already on the way so that if they don't respond to me, I know the action's still being taken. I don't need to escalate, or maybe I do. Looking at the triage rationalization, automatic surgical coding, or looking at the bed management post-op so that we can actually route people to those beds and know that they're going to be available so you don't have to keep a patient under anesthetic. In our first kind of trials here, we're able to see that for a mid-sized hospital of somewhere around 10 operating rooms, you can save somewhere between $3 to $10 million a year when you aggregate all of these things together. Now, all of this is quite challenging, but we actually have quite a very relevant background in this. I am not a doctor. I am a serial startupist and technologist. I've actually been a part of three unicorns in the last decade, and one of those was in autonomous retail. I helped build the number one competitor to Amazon Go in that space. It's actually the largest autonomous store company to date, working with the likes of Aldi, Tesco, Walmart, Dollar General, Marks & Spencer's, the LA Clippers, the Giants have it as well. And that allows us to move really quickly because we've done this before, and now we're taking our technology and expanding that into the operating room. It's not the same tech, similar flavor, and if you've ever been in an autonomous store, you'll understand the concept of it. We're already working with some leading organizations across the US, and we're starting to expand even further. So yeah, pleasure to meet you all. Look forward to speaking.
Great. And smack on time there. Very impressive, Thomas. Thank you very much. I have lots of questions, but I'll just start with one. It'd be very nice if every surgery we did was exactly the same and the process was even and you could make it efficient like that. But every surgeon in this room knows there's a huge variation. You get curveballs every now and then. How are you managing that?
So first off, it was about targeting which surgery we started with. So we did start with orthopedics because there was a lot of repeatability in it. But we avoid things like trauma right now because you could have multiple surgeries going on. It's a lot more like an art form than it is a process. However, when it comes to surgeries themselves, we build this all in like a, let's say, the Happy Path flow builder. So it's a drag and drop like flow builder that every surgeon, every kind of, let's say, surgery that's inbound on the surgical schedule, you can build into it what the path is meant to be. And if you're expecting that there's going to be some deviations already from the outset, which we can automatically detect sometimes, but if we don't, and it's you're taking a new approach that we wouldn't be able to detect, then you can just drag that in and say, hey, for this surgery, we're going to be adding an additional approach here. And what does that mean for the surgery itself? Now, for these things, if there's not an ability for us to automatically detect it, inside the operating room, they have a control console that they can see all of our predictions, they can see all of the stages, they can see all of like what our system is detecting. Kind of, we always work in this way, like we want it to be treated like it was a person standing there. And what would that person be saying to you? And what do you need to say to that person as well? And by the way, with that, we're also starting to work on a lot of voice aspects of that too. One of our investors is the CEO of 11 Labs as well, so a unicorn in this space as well. And what I would say is that it's kind of built with that in mind by default, because we knew that that's going to be the case no matter what. So it's built into the surgical process up front or allowing you to deviate during a surgery.
That's great. Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to Tempeda. We got that up there. Kishore Tipranini, thanks very much for coming. Tell us about it.
Thank you for having me. I'm an orthopedic surgeon from Phoenix. I'm also a self-taught programmer. I wrote the original PAC software for orthopedics back in the late 1990s, and that company we sold to Stryker. So I thought I'd take on this problem. The problem is documentation. We know about the problem. We spend too much of our time doing documentation and not enough just diagnosing, treating, and taking care of patients. And that's what we actually get paid for, is not for the documentation. So I know about all the commodity in this space, and I said, I'm going to solve this problem. And so that is this thing's going to stand above everything else. And what I realized is we can't use one AI to solve this problem. There must be three separate AIs that work in a chain that do this workflow. And these three AIs we call AI Scribe, AI Editor, and AI Autopilot. AI Scribe is what captures the audio of a patient visit. This has to be done, and we have our own iOS app and also our Apple Watch app. In fact, I record patient visits on my watch. It's very unobtrusive. And it has to handle multiple users. What if I'm working with a PA or an MA or a resident? They're going to see the patient first. I'm going to see them next. They need to be able to record on their device. I need to record on my device. The AI has to combine everything together into one note. And that's what we did. And so AI Scribe, it's very simple. You just type in a patient's name, you hit record, records the audio, uploads it to our server. Once you're done with the patient, it combines all the audio together and creates the note. The second AI component is called AI Editor. AI Editor runs entirely in a web browser, so it's no software to download. It basically loads up the note generated by AI Scribe, and then it's not just a simple text editor. This is an LLM. So you can take the note generated in AI Scribe and apply prompts to it, and these prompts we call macros. You can apply as many prompts as you want. Macros are the real genius of Tempeda. Here's a sample macro to reduce denials from the insurance company. modify the note text so if any tests or procedures are ordered, the risk of denials from the insurance company is eliminated or minimized. This one macro reduced the denials for an insurance company in our practice by 95%. I have not done a peer-to-peer in over a month. Okay. Here's another macro. Some of the insurance companies have told us that any level 4 or level 5 E&M visits are going to get scrutinized and automatically downcoded. I'm sure they're using an AI to scrutinize it. So we need to use an AI on our side to make sure that doesn't happen. So this macro, if we do a level 4 visit, I tell it, create a new section of the note called medical decision making that says why this should be a level 4 visit according to the 2020 AMA guidelines. So here's a simple macro. And none of these other ambient solutions handle procedures well. If I do a knee injection or an injection, I want that into the note, but I don't typically say that when I'm with the patient. So you can create a macro like this that says, put my standard shoulder injection or knee injection text into the note. These macros can be pre-selected in the iOS app when you are recording that patient visit. So on an individual patient basis, you can sit there and select the macros you want applied. And if you do that, AI Scribe generates the note, and then AI Editor automatically applies your macros so that when you open the note, it's exactly how you want it. I don't do editing of notes. It's exactly how I want it because I've already had two AIs that have worked on this and done it for me. The final AI component is called AI Autopilot. It takes the data from the editor and automates this entry into the EMR without an interface to the EMR. How does it do that? It works like a human scribe. It can actually visually see all the elements on the screen of your EMR and then does all the button clicks, data entry, and all that stuff, and automates all that stuff. So this is the Tempeta system. It virtually eliminates documentation time. It reduces downcoding and denials, vastly improves efficiency. We're seeing 30% more patients the same amount of time because that's how much time is being saved. There is no setup or training. There's no friction entry. You simply go to Tempeta.com, you sign up, there's a 10-minute video, and that's it. There's no software to download. So when you're using the editor and all that stuff, it's running entirely in the web browser. You don't have to get IT approval. You don't have to install any other software on their systems. My partners use this every day on every patient in the practice. Also at the hospital, when you're seeing a patient on routes or for consults, you don't have to install any software on their system. Just go to a web browser and your note is there. Okay. And I want everybody to try this. So it's free to use. You can sign up for free. Just download the app and watch a 10-minute video. And then after that, we give you 200 minutes of free usage. And that's how we bill, by minutes of audio processed. Normally, we give 100 minutes of free usage, but for people at this conference, if you scan this QR code and sign up with that, we'll give you 200 minutes for free. Every single physician that's ever started using this uses on every single patient. This has only been out for 4 weeks. We already have over 3,000 patient visits in the first 4 weeks with no marketing and no partners.
Great. Thank you. My first question is, can it order your latte at about 10 a.m. when you're in the middle of clinic and you need some help? If it can't do that, I don't know. So let's address the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And we heard about it a little bit earlier with the finance talks. Epic has brought out the suite of agents, essentially. How are you seeing that affect you, or how do you see that affect you in the future? Is there anything there that,
you know, I think competition in the space is great, but I have so many physicians that use Epic and all that kind of stuff, and they don't like it. Okay.
I'm there.
Yeah. And that's my point. I, as a physician, know what our pain points are and how simple this is to use when you compare it to something like that and how complicated that is. It's just what it is. But that's why I wanted this to be EMR agnostic. This will work with Epic. It will work with any EMR. And then let's suppose you decide to change practices and move to another place. It doesn't matter. This goes with you.
Great. Thanks very much. Let's move on to the next talk. And Zhu, you're going to talk to us, Formis Labs.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Go ahead. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. And I think, subbing in for another company. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak. My name is Zhu. I'm from New Zealand. I'm the CEO and founder of Formis. We're a software company deep in the orthopedic space, doing automated surgical planning. That's certainly where we started, but where we're really going towards is this digital twin concept across the whole patient journey. And sort of two key things, right? So first is scale. So how do we scale personalized orthopedics? We know that personalized medicine can improve outcomes. How do we do that efficiently for every patient in orthopedics? And then once you can do that at scale, how does that bring the whole tech ecosystem together? We all know the big orthopedic companies have a lot of tech. How do you bring that all together into one coherent experience for the patient, for the surgeon? So my background is biomedical engineering. I'm a biomedical engineer. And our whole team really, which I'll go into a little bit, has our background in AI and computational biomechanics. And so we really want to lean into that to empower the surgeon so that they can apply in visualization to everyone. That's really the vision we want to do. Not so much on the team itself. I will say, though, perhaps maybe for the investors, we're based in New Zealand. Salary for software engineers is about half of that in the US. So we're quite capital efficient. And we do obviously have a great set of advisors around the world, not only in Australia, New Zealand, but in the US as well. So big picture, where is orthopedics headed? And I want to talk about this because this is about bringing things together. We start off with the hardware. And now everyone has a whole cluster, a constellation of technology around the hardware you've got. We're seeing some of these already. And of course, there's robotics, there's AR, a whole bunch of wearables. Where is all this taking us next? What is this next horizon we're going to? I think that's musculoskeletal care. You're talking about that across the whole patient continuum. And that opens up a whole bunch of opportunities all the way from right at the beginning when they're starting to present with certain indications all the way to post-operative and beyond. And so with all of that, we want something that can bring it together. So if we look at that patient journey, diagnostics, planning of the surgery, delivery in the OR, recovery, this is how our platform currently looks at that. So in the diagnostics phase, we just launched a new product called HipCheck that automatically, using AI, of course, that's why we're here, that tells the surgeon about the spinal pelvic characteristics of that patient that helps you make what kind of decision you want to do intraoperatively. Then there's our flagship product, Formis Hip, that automatically plans that surgery in 3D, that integrates with a range of intraoperative technologies. And then postoperatively, what we're calling more of a sort of internal code name, Formis Navigator, this is then taking that digital twin we have built of the patient along the way and using that through their recovery and beyond. Of course, as a software company in this space, integrating with the strategic is an important part. So we have an API layer. All our stuff is in the cloud. The API layer we're calling Formis Atlas. This is what allows us to talk to the industry, send our data seamlessly back and forth. So into the product a little bit more, here's some demo of the software in action. Formis Hip is really a best-in-class 3D planning software. I say that not because only I think it is, but the strategics we work with, they have told us this is the best that's out there. It's intuitive, it's efficient, and it's effective. We've done about 3.5 surgeries with this in Australia now with Zimmer Biomet partnership. And this week, we just went live in Japan with them as well. Surgeons around the world have just picked this up and just gone ahead. And across all these cases, we know it works. We haven't had any adverse outcomes. And as I said, it's integrating into the technology ecosystem. In the pipeline, what's really exciting, two key things. One is how do you remove the reliance on CT? We've built our own AI, as with all of our tech. It's all built in-house, X-ray to 3D module that plugs into our 3D planner. So you get your couple of X-rays and off you go with the 3D plan. And the other thing is around the digital twins. So this is our soft tissue model. Not only are we building models of the patient's bones, but their muscles. And we're using that to not only inform during the surgery how you should be making decisions that minimize your risk of soft tissue damage, but postoperatively, how do we provide that more personalized recovery process? So the other company that was doing personalized rehab, it'd be great to chat. It's about bringing that ecosystem together. Once you have automated and it brings high efficiency to the planning of the surgery, to building that patient digital twin, how do you bring together the rest of the ecosystem? We've got a best-in-class pre-op planning system, got a highly disruptive pipeline, and we're unifying technologies in that ecosystem. So if you're strategic, come talk to me about how we can plug into your ecosystem and bring it all together. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zhu. And thanks for bringing another great accent to the podium here. My question with like any technology is always, you're bringing extra cost in. What's your value proposition? How are you marketing? How this is going to, we're going to hear a talk on value-based care next. So how are you marketing this as a value proposition to a system, a hospital system, surgeons, et cetera?
That's a great question. So our business model has been B2B or B2 enterprise with the big strategics, but also, of course, the surgeons are a key factor as part of that. And it's really about efficiency. So the people who are familiar with this kind of stuff, you would know that, for example, Stryker, all the other companies, they have a big team of engineers who's doing manually what we're doing automatically behind the scenes. So we do automatically in about 30-40 minutes what it takes a current team of engineers days or weeks to do. So in Australia, Zimmer Biomet is not running a huge team of robotics techs out there or backroom engineers to support this. We do this. This is automated. There's no human needed. And it also means that for a surgeon, they're not having to sit down with the rep to kind of tweak this plan, customize it to their needs. 70% of our plans, the surgeon just goes ahead and executes. So it's bringing massive efficiency and scalability, as I mentioned, to the whole process.
Great. Thanks very much. Why don't we move on to Ben Schwartz from Commons Clinic?
Yeah, thanks. Ben Schwartz. I'm the SVP of Care Services and Strategy for Commons Clinic. This is going to be a little bit of a pitch and a little bit of a plea. I want to talk about 5 reasons you should build your AI in-house, or at least consider it, and go through our experience developing Commons AI, which we did in-house. So what or who is Commons Clinic? The 6-minute version is that we're building the next generation multi-specialty medical group. Our 3 tenets are: we want to be physician-led, we want to be value-focused, and we want to be tech-native. So we currently have now 21 doctors in the LA market, 17 orthopedic surgeons. We're starting to expand our service lines into cardiology and bariatrics to build out that multi-specialty clinic. We're value-focused in the sense that we are doing bundled payments with commercial insurers. We're doing risk-based contracting, both upside and downside risk. We have a direct care product. We work with conveners and do direct contracting as well. And then the tech-native part of it is not just in the operating room. We are doing artificial disc replacements and robotic total joints in the ASC, but we're also building sort of the infrastructure for operations and clinical tools that we call Commons AI. So reason number one that we decided to build our AI in-house, and something you should consider as well, is that the models are already incredible. We know the foundational models have gotten really good. ChatGPT-5, Gemini, Claude, I think is up to 4.5 now. So you don't need to reinvent the wheel. The foundational models already give you the tools that you need, and we expect them to continue to get better over time. And so the world class right out of the box, you can build on top of those, and you don't need necessarily an aftermarket third party to do that for you. Reason number two is that we all know in healthcare, customization matters. We were talking this morning about why can't we get adoption of these tools? And the reason is they're often disruptive to the workflow. And so your clinicians are having to change what they're doing to accommodate these tools. When you do it yourself and you build in-house, you can build it to fit your workflow. So the clinicians don't have to alter their workflow. You alter the product to the workflow, and you're much more likely to get adoption that way and get feedback. And that feeds into reason number three, is that if you build it in-house, you can get rapid iteration, and it's with your people. So it's not with a third party. You can get immediate feedback, whether it's from the clinicians that are using it, the back office staff that's using it, even if you have patient-facing tools, that you can get feedback from them, and you can very quickly iterate on it. So with our tool, we give feedback overnight. The engineers work on it. By the next day, we have the next version of it. You don't have to wait 3 to 6 months for the next version to come out. We can do it in real time with feedback from our doctors, patients, and staff. Reason number four is you control your own data. As we've heard many times, data is kind of the gold mine in a lot of these things. So if you use a third party, you're sending your data out. They're doing whatever they're doing with it, capturing it, selling it to somebody else. Doing it in-house, we're able to keep our own data. We own it. We ensure privacy and compliance. We know there's been some issues. Google famously got into trouble, not necessarily understanding HIPAA with some of the data that they were using. And so this way we keep it in-house, and then we can also unlock the data ourselves. We get to capture the value of that data. If we're doing value-based care, we get to prove based on our data that we are delivering higher quality care, fewer complications, and that allows us to contract better. And we have more control and insight into our own data. And then reason number five is I think it's fun. Everyone here is here because they enjoy technology. I think it's rewarding, engaging, and empowering to build these types of tools. And so if you do it in-house, you don't have to be a coder. You don't have to be an expert in technology. But as a clinician, if I can give feedback, if I can kind of tell whoever's building it how I want it built, I think that's very empowering to you as a clinician to have real-time feedback and watch this thing grow and evolve over time as you're building it. So this is our simple schedule screen. It's filterable by location and position and date. If you dig into it, this is our main interface. And the goal here is for the clinician to never have to leave this screen. You don't have to click through multiple screens. You can do everything within this interface. It sits as a layer on top of whatever EMR, and it pulls the data from the EMR, not just office notes, anything, physical therapy notes, anything that gets scanned in there, the AI can then pull from. And then you have this timeline. So if I'm in a busy clinic, it gives me a reverse chronological order of what's happened with that patient. So I don't have to dig through the note. It's surfacing all the information that I need right there as I'm going through clinic. And then I can click on these other tools within the EMR, such as Ascribe, or in this layer of AI that sits on top of the EMR, such as Ascribe. This is our surgical journey that you can look through the different steps of a patient going through surgery. We have a prior authorization tool that we can pull information from the EMR automatically to say, yes, this patient's been through physical therapy. Yes, we have the appropriate x-rays that are documented. We can also look at risk factors for optimization. So if you're doing a spine fusion and it picks up that the patient is a smoker, then you might do some education and optimization. And we can do that all within the same interface. This is a post-op surgical protocol, but as you can see up top, you can choose the language. And so it's generating this not only personalized to the patient in terms of the recovery protocol and the surgery that they're having, but also in their native language. We're in LA, so obviously doing that in Spanish is very important, but you can click on any language automatically, very quickly within the EMR, generate that note in the patient's native language. And then finally, if you build it in-house, you can also do things that are experimental. You can kind of work behind the scenes on the next version of what you're rolling out. So this is what we're working on now. We call it our clinical command center. The AI is listening to the office visit. It's pulling forward any tasks the staff has to do and follow up on. And they can go into this kind of central command center and now start to do some of these tasks that are automatically populating for the back office staff. And so it's fun to do these things. And that's my argument for building it in-house. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Your title included integrated value-based care. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? I'm interested to hear how you're applying that to value-based care.
Sure. So the ethos of what we're doing as Commons Clinic outside the AI is value-based care. So we're doing direct contracting. We're approaching insurance companies and doing the hard work of entering bundled contracts. And so this is a tool to pull forward that information. And we think about utilization management, it gets a bad name, and rightly so, for care denial. But if we can use utilization management to our favor and say, yes, we're choosing the right patients, the right procedure, we're putting people on a non-surgical pathway when it's appropriate, we're doing surgery and the right surgery on people when it's appropriate, we can pull that data forward with a tool like this. We can put it in our EMR and help us kind of make those decisions at the point of care. And so that's how we see AI and a tool like this feeding into value-based care, is it's helping us make more informed, appropriate decisions for the patients, and that's where the value is.
Okay, and then in the last minute, just to follow on that, if one of the criticisms of value-based care is you're the race to the bottom, right? Once you've cut all the fat out, there's not much left. Is your value proposition then that you are maintaining that process constantly?
Yeah, exactly. We're learning as we go along. We can prove that what we're doing is valuable. We do the hard work of going back and forth with whatever the payer is. But I think the key is, if you can prove that you're doing a good job, then you can make the argument that, yes, we are saving you money. Yes, our outcomes are good. Yes, our complications are low. Doesn't guarantee that they're, you know, we're not going to still race to the bottom. But I think it's always about data and bringing a strong argument to back up that, yes, we are worth what you're spending on us. And oh, by the way, we're also saving you a lot of downstream costs as well.
That's great. And I think we're well within Steph's time zone here. So thank you very much to a great panel here. Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this session. Next week, we'll wrap up our showcase with Dr. Michael Havig, CEO of HealthMe, as he introduces TrackBatch Health, Proprio, VZ, and Think Surgical. I'm Dr. Stefano Bini. See you next week.